I'm going to dedicate the learning for the Refor Shlema for Rivka Chana Bas Zipora and Navadina Bas Sterna and Lezecher Nishmas Donnie Morris. Nishamash Havanilia. Okay, so we're coming now. We just counted 35 in the Omer. So we're on the last, we have 2 weeks to go till we get to Shavuos, which we celebrate, we commemorate the revelation at Sinai. So here we come out of Egypt, and we go for 50 days, and then we come to Mount Sinai, and we experience the revelation. And at the revelation, the question is, what happened there? So at the revelation, we experience some kind of, it's really a once-in-a-lifetime type of event that God comes down onto the mountain and he reveals himself to us, which is something that when you learn, let's say, Kabbalistic books, and they try to explain what they're trying, the whole system of the Kabbalah is struggling with the issue of how do we understand the endless and non-physical God? How does he, quote unquote, interact with the physical world? Like, how does he even speak to us? So everything that we're familiar with is completely physical. So how does the non-physical being come and speak to us or communicate with us? If anything, the truth is God really doesn't speak even. I mean, physical, you know, if you think about speech, it's also has a physical element to it, a very physical element to it. So how does that work exactly? So whereas, let's say, other religions, like the idea that you can have a God that manifests as a human being, that is so really foreign. What?
Ridiculous.
What's interesting is, so there's a rabbi, Tovia Singer, who really, it's pretty interesting to listen to his, he has an incredible knowledge of Christianity. So he just answers all these questions about these issues. Very interesting. But one of the things that he notes is incredible.
What's his name?
Tovia Singer.
I gotta read that. Okay.
Yeah, I'll get you the information. He has you can watch videos all day long from this guy. It's remarkable. His knowledge of Judaism, Christianity, and etc. He's really, it's unbelievable. You couldn't. It's really very worthwhile. If that's something that you want to, he's really the authority, I would say, on that. But one of the things he mentions there he said you cannot understand the incredible connection that Christians have to Jesus, and it's something that's just so strong and powerful. And so we clearly, human beings, have a need to be able to connect to God and to connect to something that we can relate to. So therefore, it makes sense that you'll have a whole group of people that are so connected to this idea of a physical God. And so, but here on our side, we're saying, and the Torah, if you read it closely and carefully, is very adamant that that God is not, you know, a physical being. And so the question then becomes, like, how exactly, or what does it mean that God came down? What does it mean that God spoke? So we can understand the idea that God communicated with us, that we experienced something, and so that we were able to, you know, and so the Maimonides, Rambam spends a lot of time discussing this as well, as to like what exactly occurred there and how does this all work in terms of this communication. So the Torah is something that is the bridge that in a sense we say that the Torah is a is in a certain sense, like the way that the Tanya, this is the book of Tanya's, where explains the idea that Hashem, in a sense, put himself into the Torah. That there's a piece of God that's in the Torah, so that when we read Torah and we learn Torah, somehow we're connecting to God in a very deep way. Again, what does that mean? Again, if we're talking about, you know, this idea, this, how do we bridge this disconnect between the physical and the non-physical? Somehow God infused within the Torah something of himself. So this, again, there's this challenge that we have to be able to somehow overcome. How do we get to that place of being able to connect to something that, again, is being physical beings? How we get to that place. Now, what's interesting, actually, just on this, I'm going to jump. I was going to do this another time, but once I started in this direction, I'm going to jump to 89A. Because it's also within this theme. So I want to look at this piece here. Okay, so look at this piece. And Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, so we were looking at Shabbos 89A. Okay. And when we read this piece, it's going to be no clue what it's talking about. And then...
Are we supposed to see this?
Can you see it?
No.
All guys are green. I got a blue-green
stripe. Yeah, funny line.
Back?
No.
There you go.
I see 89A now, yes.
Okay, good. Now we're back. Okay. Right, let me just do this thing. Notice this is here. One second. Okay, just trying to get this cleared out. Okay, now it's not working. Oh, great. Oh, goodness gracious. Okay, let's start this again. Hold on. What did I do?
So as you click, is it the idea that the people at Sinai actually heard a physical voice that sounded like a person?
So that's the thing. It's not clear. Like I don't know. I don't know if that's
if it's a knowable answer.
The problem is that here we go. We can work with what we have, let's just say. Okay?
Yeah.
Here we go. You see it there now? You. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Okay. So, and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, when Moses descended from standing before the Holy One, blessed be he, with the Torah, the Satan came and said before him, Master of the universe, where is the Torah? Okay, so Moses is going down. Moses just left, and he's bringing down the Torah. At that point, the Satan comes to God and says, Master of the universe, where is the Torah? He said to him, and God answered, I have given it to the earth. So the Satan then goes to the earth and said, where is the Torah? The earth answered, I don't know, as only God understands its ways, and he knows its place. He then went to the sea and asked, where is the Torah? And the sea said to him, it's not with me. The Satan then went to the depths, and he asked, where is the Torah? And the depths said to him, it's not within me. And from where is it derived that the sea and the depths answered him that this way? As it is stated, the depth said, It's not within me. And the sea said, it is not with me. Destruction and death said, we heard a rumor of it with it, with our ears. Satan returned and said before the Holy One, blessed be he, master of the universe, I searched for the Torah throughout all the earth and did not find it. God then said to him, go to Moses, son of Amram. Go to son of Amram. He went to Moses and said to him, the Torah that the Holy One, blessed be he, gave you, where is it? Moses said to him, and what am I that the Holy One, blessed be he, would have given me the Torah? I am unworthy. The Holy One, blessed be he, said to Moses, Moses, are you a fabricator? Moses said before him, Master of the universe, you have a hidden treasure in which you delight every day, as it is stated, I was his delight every day, playing before him at every moment. Should I take credit for myself and say that you gave it to me? The Holy One, blessed be he, said to Moses, since you belittled yourself, the Torah will be called by your name, as it is stated, remember the Torah of Moses, my servant, to whom I commanded at Horeb, at Sinai, laws and statutes for all of Israel. Okay? So, what does this mean? Okay, this is coded. This is called coded language. Okay?
Coded for belittling himself?
Yeah, he's because Moses belittled himself, made himself small. Okay, made himself nothing. Okay?
He named the books, five books.
Why?
Is that how he named the books, the five books of Moses?
Correct, exactly.
Isn't that like being rewarded for belittling yourself?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, it's being rewarded for being humble.
Yes, thank you. It's more of the humility, okay? But let's see. So what's this talking about, okay? So now we turn to the Maharal Prague, who lived in the 1500s, right? And he tells us, he explains this, he breaks this down for us, okay? So what's going on here? So first things first. When Moses descended from standing before the Holy One, blessed be he, with the Torah, Satan came and said, now who's Satan? Who's the Satan? The Satan is the prosecuting angel, okay? And his job, explains the Maharal, his job is to ask the questions that should be asked. When there's something that's wrong, he's the character that comes forward and asks the difficult questions. So what happened? What caused Satan to come and start asking questions? So we go back to the beginning line. When Moses went down from standing before Hashem, and he left with the Torah, meaning that Moses now is going to take the Torah down to earth, down to the physical world. It's at that point that the Satan comes and says, wait a second, where did the Torah go? Meaning, the Torah is God's creation, and it's a reflection of God, who is not physical. So the Torah really belongs not in the physical realm. So Satan comes and says, where did the Torah go? It doesn't belong anywhere but up here. So when Moses descends with it, boom, Satan comes and says, wait a second, something's not right here. And God says to him, I've given it to the earth. What? So now begins the story here. He then goes to the earth. Where's the Torah? So the answer that the earth gives is, I have no clue. Why? Because the earth, it doesn't belong in the earth. So it comes to, where is the Torah? He says to him, I don't know. Only God understands its ways. Meaning,
well, is it?
Yeah.
He didn't really descend in, if physically he brings it, he doesn't, it's nothing he brings down physically, right?
Well,
it's still in his mind.
No, but he had the tablets. He brought the tablets down, right? So on the tablets, the question about what's on the tablets, so the way we understand the tablets, first we have the Ten Commandments on the tablets. It's possible there are descriptions of having a massive knowledge that was actually encrypted. You know, today we can totally understand what's incredible. There's a Gemara in the Yerushalmi, we just learned it in Shkalim, in the Daf Yomi cycle, that describes and says that all of knowledge of Torah was on those tablets. So we said, like, that's not possible. We said, of course it is. You have a computer with 10 terabytes, with a terabyte of storage. So the idea of having massive knowledge imparted onto something is not so difficult for us to actually fathom. But either way, he's coming down with he's bringing Torah into the physical realm. And that's what the Gemara is saying here. The Gemara is telling us that the Satan's question is, like, it doesn't belong down on the earth. Because if the Torah is a reflection of God, and God's not physical, belongs in the ethereal world of the non-physical, so then how is it possible that Torah can come down? And so when it comes down, God says, I gave it to the earth. Satan turns, okay, goes and asks the earth. Earth says, I don't have a clue what you're talking about. Because the earth is also saying, Torah doesn't belong here. I have no clue what you're talking about. Right? I don't know. Only God understands its ways. So then, what the Maral explains, what the Gemara is doing.
Wait. Yeah. Why did God say, I gave it to the earth? Oh, and then the earth says, I don't have it. So God's lying.
He's not this. No. He doesn't say, I don't have it. He says, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't understand. God understands its ways. He He's saying, I don't know. So the earth right away is saying, I don't know, as if to say, like, I don't understand. I don't really understand what you're talking about, because the earth doesn't have any understanding of what Torah is. It's reflecting and understands, and it's totally in line with the Satan's issue right away. Like, what's going on here? Torah down on earth? Doesn't make sense. God says it is down on earth. So now the Satan continues and he goes to the sea. So going to water. So the Maral says there, at least there's a little bit less. It's a little bit less physical in the sense it's not as, you know, earth, we think of physicality as like hard with like form. So there's less form in the ocean, even though there is form in terms of fish and things like that, but there's less of the form that we're used to on the solid earth. So that he goes to the sea and says, where is it? Where's the Torah? And the sea said to him, it's not with me. So he doesn't say, I don't understand what you're talking about. There's a little bit less of that, but it's not here. Okay. So then he goes to the depths. The Maral explains the depths is talking about. So you have the earth, you have the ocean, and then you have the depths are like there's the cavity of what's beneath the earth. There are places in the earth, underneath the earth, that are empty, but are surrounded with something. So it's like a cavity. So he went to the depths and asked, where's the Torah? And the depths said to him, it's not within me. So now we're seeing a progression from, I don't know what you're talking about, to, I know what you're talking about, it's not with me. And then also the depths saying, now, it's the first one says it's not with me, and the next one says it's not within me, okay? So you see that...
So is this kind of leading us to, you know, I don't remember what it's called, but you know how when a Jewish baby's born and then the angel, gives him his klep?
Right.
And everything is in... It is a blueprint of isn't the blueprint of Torah and everything in us, and then it's just kind of like we can't retrieve it.
Right.
Like it's like, is that the same sense that it was brought down? It's within every Jewish soul.
So it's not interesting. It's not really. I'll tell you what. That's not where the Gemara is going. The messaging of this Gemara is not in that respect here. Okay. He's really the way the Maral explains it. The Gemara is saying that there really is a question of how exactly, if we're saying Torah is God and a piece of God, it's like that it's an expression of godliness. So then how can it come down to this earth? It doesn't belong on this earth. It's not earthly. It's not, the earth says, you're right, I don't have a clue, you know, what you're talking about. As we go to the sea in the depths, which is less physical in nature, it's not within me, okay? And then when it gets to this thing of, now this is very interesting, destruction and death. So what is destruction and death? So this is unbelievable. The Maharal explains, it's like, like you see things, someone wrote this in the 1500s, and you're like going, you know, you listen, he's writing something, you're trying to understand, and then you're like, wow, what he's explaining. The Maharal says that when it says destruction and death, it's referring to a state of the place that is what we call, or what science calls, the God particle. This idea that there was a point in time where we went from nothingness, utter nothingness, to some type of material matter. And so crossing from completely non-physical into a realm of the physical, there's some kind of, you know, they call it the God particle, where there was like that, there's a, that the beginning point of physicality. So it's at that point where you're crossing from the non-physical to the physical, that there's something there, at least at that point, that's like the place in the physical realm that you could understand, where it's like the bridge between those two worlds. So destruction, and that's destruction and death. Once we became physical, I was learning this with some people yesterday, and someone said, he goes, that the second that we're born, we're really going towards death. It's like that's like the nature of human existence. A physical, right? The physical reality is entropy or going towards what's the word?
Expansion.
What is it?
Well, Woody Allen said in his movie, "Why bother? The universe is expanding."
but it's going towards death and destruction,
that's,
right? But
it's okay.
No, it's a better word for it. Either way, but the idea is that we're going towards our physical demise, right? It's the nature of physicality. So at that point, though, of where physical and non-physical meet, so at that place, you have. It says, we heard rumor of it in our ears. So that already, in that place, that you have this idea of the physical not meeting the non-physical, that it already has a little bit more of a possibility of connecting or relating to it. And therefore, it says here, we heard a rumor of it in our ears. So now as we go back in the Gemara, we just look at the progression here, you see that here the Satan's bothered by the fact that the Torah leaves the heavens, leaves the non-physical place. And then God says, no, points him in the direction of the earth. Earth says, I have no clue what you're talking about. I don't even know what you're talking about. And then the other ones that are less physical, it's not within me, or it's not with me, not within me. And then the depths, right? But here it says, destruction of death, we heard a rumor of it with our ears, is almost to say it has some kind of connection, because I heard about it. Like, I'm already, like, you see this progression of a closer potential relation, okay, if they can relate to it, okay? But here, finally, when God says, no, go to Moses, go to Ben Amram. So he goes to Moses, and the Torah, right, he says to him, what am I? Look, it's going to go to the Hebrew. Halach etzal Moshe amar lo, Torah shenatan l'Kadosh Baruch Hu heichan hu, amar lo, v'chima ani. Who am I that God gave me the Torah? Just as a crazy side, ma is like what, or who, is in Hebrew ma, right? So this word right here, ma. So in the numerical value of mem is 40, and he is 5. Right? So that idea of 45, that's the amount of people that were unfortunately died in the up in Meron. But the idea of, like, who am I that God gave me the Torah? to that, the Holy One, blessed be He, said to Moses, "Moses, are you a fabricator? Badayata, are you a fabricator?" Moses said to God, "Master of the universe, you have a hidden treasure in which you delight every day. Should I take credit for myself and say that you gave it to me?" And that to that God said, "Since you belittled yourself, you made yourself small, it's therefore will be called on your name." So what the Talmudic piece is teaching us is that Torah can only have a place in a person who, what you said like before, the idea of anivut is the idea of humility. The idea of, not to say you're nothing. Humility is not saying I'm nothing. Humility is the idea of one being able to realize or to take away the I or it's really understanding the taking yourself out of the equation, so to speak. So the best way to explain this is the way they describe Moses's understanding or how he related to God. It says that he had, his vision was Ispaklaria Hami'ira. Ispaklaria Hami'ira means he had the clearest vision, as opposed to a Ispaklaria She'en Hami'ira. Okay, so what is, so how does that, how do we understand that? So the most amazing analogy I've ever heard, which explains this, is you're looking through the window outside your house. You're in your house and you're looking outside. You have the big picture window and you're looking outside through the window. Depending on how the sun is, you know, the shining, and depending on the cleanliness of your window, right? So you'll end up seeing a reflection of yourself in the window. So even though you're looking outside, depending on how things are you know, the different potential situational things that are you know, going on there, but a lot of times you'll actually see a reflection of oneself in the window as you're looking outside. So the idea of Ispaklaria Mira was that Moshe, when he looked and he experienced God, he saw nothing of himself. He was able to suspend all of his I and able to like take in God completely. That allowed him to see things with 100% clarity. Most of us project parts of ourselves into how we see things, right? So because we have ourselves, it clouds our ability to see things with clarity. We're seeing a lot of ourselves. Like, it all starts with Abraham. It says that Abraham, when he traveled around, his work was really focused on humanity's projection. When it talked about God, it was always struggling with the fact that man, we as human beings, are a lot of what we see is self-projection. So therefore, we can experience God up to a certain point. But the truth is, this works for relationships as well. The more that we have of the I, the less that we can see of the thou. Let's call it that, the I-thou thing. But the idea of this anivut of the back that he belittled himself, it's not that he said, I'm a nothing. That goes to the joke, you know, there was a yeshiva where they worked on, their whole thing was that they belittled themselves. So these guys, you know, they'd sit there all day and said, I am a nothing, ich bin a garnished. You know, so one day this guy walks in and he sits down and he starts saying, ich bin a garnish, I'm a nothing. And the two older guys look and say, who is this guy to come in here and say that he's a nothing? I mean, that's not right. So, but the idea is that, you know, it's not to say that I'm a nothing as much as to be able to suspend oneself's, you know, your own self, to be able to then see everything that's outside of oneself. And that's really what's going on. What is it?
So go back a second. So the people, Satan is looking for the Torah, and the earth doesn't say, I don't know. What's the point? What is the meaning of each of these three steps What is that about? Like, did the earth not know that it had been given to her? Did the seas were unaware?
What the Maharal says is that what's really going on here is, and what the Gemara is saying, it's answering this issue of how the physical realm has no ability to relate to a Torah that's completely not physical. So here God says, I've sent it down to earth, and the earth doesn't even have the ability to even fathom. I have no idea what you're talking about, right? He says, I don't know what you're talking about here, right? Right. Right? He says, God understands it. I don't know. I don't know what you mean. The sea and the depths, which have a little bit less physicality, say it's not within me, but at least they have some type of ability to relate a little bit. It's only when you get to death, destruction, and death, which are really on that edge, that said I heard a rumor within our ears, I can relate to it, right? That I already like almost have the ability to connect, but it doesn't work. It only comes through because what a human being is, and what he explains, is that human beings really have these both aspects. We have a physical part of ourselves, and we have a spiritual, non-physical part of ourselves. So what's interesting is what he says, the Maharal says, is that it only starts, the Satan only starts his questioning when Moses left, when Moses descended from standing before the Holy One, blessed be he. That's when things started. That's when the questions become, that's when he comes to the fore. Meaning the Satan doesn't ask questions unless there's a reason to ask questions. When is he activated, so to speak? When Moses descended from standing before the Holy One, when he left the upper realms of the heavens, so to speak, meaning he's in that non-physical realm. That's what it describes. It says that Moses went up for 40 days and 40 nights, and it says he didn't eat or drink. So how does that work? So he went to a place of complete, you know, like he went to the spiritual realm. You know, and therefore he left in a certain sense. Does it mean that he didn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights? I don't know. What I do think it means for sure is it's communicating the fact that Moses went to a place that wasn't physical. He was in a non-physical place. You know, when God communicates with Moses, or he communicates with the matriarchs, the patriarchs, or anybody that had prophecy. So that type of experience was a non-physical, you know, we don't have prophecy today, so we can't necessarily relate to it, but it's clearly something that's, you know, it talks about the prophecies, the prophetic, you know, let's say the prophets, when they had their prophecy, that they had to be in a state of happiness, and they had to be in a great place, and this and that, but how exactly they experienced that, that's something that's very foreign to us because we're so not connected to that place of the prophetic, of connecting to a realm that's not physical. You know, it's like something that's not, we're so unfortunately not as connected to that. So we struggle with getting our heads around it, so to speak. But, you know, either way, so what happens here is that you see that this whole progression here starts when man leaves that place. Satan was not bothered until Moses descended. Until that point, he was totally okay with this. The idea that Moses could be up there. Now, there are other, in this Talmudic piece, here, let me show you this.
Wait, so he goes to the sea, he goes to the depths, they don't have it. Then he says, and then God says, now go to Moses.
Right, so then, and that's where, and then, and he kind of, that's it, but that's where it okay, so check this out. Okay, here, this just shows you this idea of what the Gemara is. I'm going back a step here, but you'll see that there's a real issue with the Gemara is telling us here. Okay, look at this one again. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi teaches this: when Moses ascended on high to receive the Torah, the ministering angel said before the Holy One, blessed be he, master of the universe, what is one born of a woman doing here among us? What's a physical human being doing here? The Holy One, blessed be He, said to them, He came to receive the Torah. The angel said before Him, the Torah is a hidden treasure that was concealed by you for 974 generations before the creation of the world, and you seek to give it to flesh and blood? At His stated the word which He commanded to 1,000 generations, since the Torah, the word of God, was given to the 26th generation after Adam, the first man, the remaining 974 generations must have preceded the creation. Okay, so whatever that's talking about, this whole idea of the time before. What is man that you are mindful of him, and that the sons of man that you think of him? So rather, God our Lord, how glorious is your name in all of the earth, that your majesty is placed above the heavens. The rightful place of God's majesty, the Torah, is in the heavens. So again, the same issue. What is the Torah? How can you give it to a human being? What does God do? He says to Moses, provide them with an answer as to why the Torah should be given to the people. So Moses is like, what? Moses had to provide God, master of the universe, I'm afraid lest they burn me with the breath of their mouths. So like, you know, they're going to burn me to death here, the angels. God said, grasp my throne of glory for strength and protection, and provide them with an answer. And from where it is, and from where is this derived? As I stated, He causes him to grasp the front of the throne and spreads his cloud over it. Okay, fine. So basically, and Rav Nachman said, this verse teaches that God spread the radiance of His presence and His cloud over Moses. Moses said before Him, Master of the universe, the Torah that you are giving me, what is written in it? God said to him, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt from the house of bondage. Moses said to the angels, did you descend to Egypt? Were you enslaved to Pharaoh? Why should the Torah be yours? Again, Moses asked, what else is written in it? God said to him, you shall have no other gods before me. Moses said to the angels, do you dwell among the nations who worship idols that you require this special warning? Again, Moses said, what else is written? The Holy One, blessed be He, remember the Sabbath day to sanctify. Moses said to the angels, ask the angels, do you perform labor that you require rest from it? Again, Moses asked, what else is written in it? Do you take the name of the Lord your God in vain? So meaning that it is prohibited to swear falsely. Moses asked the angels, do you conduct business with one another that may lead you to swear falsely? Again, Moses asked, what else has been in it? The Holy One said, honor your father and your mother. Moses asked the angels, do you have a father or mother that would render the commandment to honor them relevant to you? Again, what else is written there? You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal. Moses asked the angels, is there jealousy among you? Is there an evil inclination within you that you would render these commandments relevant? Immediately they agreed with the Holy One, blessed be He, that He made the right decision to give the Torah to the people. As it is stated, God your Lord, how glorious is your name in all earth. While your majesty is placed above the heavens, it is not written, because the angels agreed with God that it is appropriate to give the Torah to the people on earth. And not only that, immediately each and every one of the angels became an admirer of Moses and passed something to him. As it is stated, you ascended on high and you took captive, you took gifts on account of man, and even among the rebellious also, that the Lord God might dwell there. The meaning of this verse, in reward for the fact that they called you man and that you're not an angel and the Torah is applicable to you, you took gifts from the angels. And even the angel of death gave him something, as Moses told Aaron how to stop the plague, as is stated, and he placed the incense and he atoned for the people. And the verse says, and he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. If it were not that the angel of death told him this remedy, would he have known about it? So meaning he basically was told from the angel of death about the idea of the Torah, about the incense, somehow that comes to stop the death that was going on at the time of this plague that had occurred. Okay, but what's the takeaway here? Is that we see this idea, again, when Rabbi Shimon Levi comes and teaches this idea, like here, the angels are saying, like, Moses, God, what are you doing giving the Torah to man, to a physical being? But what's interesting in this piece, what's going on, is that it's saying, but that's exactly the point, is that this was geared. What?
They need it.
It's specifically addressing the human condition. Which is, so, right? So it's interesting. So here, piece one that we we started with the one that comes after this. So the first one in the chronology of the way that it's laid out in the Talmud and the Gemara is this case of where the angels say, "What's going on, HaKadosh? How what's man doing here to get the Torah?" And the answer is, in this piece at least, is that it's completely addressing the human condition. What's Moses' real answer to them is like, do you guys really have an evil inclination that you would need such a Torah? So that the Torah is really coming to address that part of man, the evil inclination, the thing that drives us. Right? Because he says here, at the end of it, is there jealousy among you? And is there an evil inclination within you? Immediately, and that's where they agreed and said to God, you know, okay, that this makes sense that that the Torah is going to be given to human beings. And that they fell in love with him. Immediately, each and every one of the angels became an admirer of Moses. Right? So that it's like a very, it's a, they were came naselo ohev maselo davar. They alisa lamar v'shavisa shavi lakata matanas har bottom. He took and he was. They fell in love with Moshe, and they gave him something. They gave him whatever they gave him, and the Talmud tells us that the angel of death is the one that sticks out in terms of what he gave them, gave Moses. But the idea that they fell in love with him because they understood that man had something that was unique, that was different than them, and that the human being that really has this aspect that really stands out, that makes everything work in a way, because there's going to be movement. There's angels, it says that the description of an angel is something that's a standing. It's an omed. They don't move. Human beings, we are mahalchim, we walk. We're a work in progress, and so there. That's where things, so to speak. That's where everything happens within the human being, within the humanity, as opposed to the world of the angels, where it's completely a static reality. Nothing's changing. There's no movement in that world. So it's a very interesting contrast. But that the angels, when it's laid out to them, and the idea of the evil inclination, which is really the driver of what makes things move in this world, the idea that there's that we have lust and that we have desires, but that's also what makes us want to do things. It's like it's a driver, so to speak. When they understood that, they fell in love with Moses. Perhaps maybe because he showed them this idea, or that they recognized that man is. That, which makes everything kind of work. So you see that, so two things in this Talmud now, so 89a, when we think of Peites Shabbos, it's struggling with this idea of how does Torah, which is ethereal and spiritual, relate to a physical world? The angels take issue with Moses coming to get the Torah, and then the Satan, which is interesting. Anytime that you see the Satan, the idea of Satan mentioned, what it really is the prosecutor, and really the prosecutor's job is always to ask the questions of why, what is going on here when something is not right. So that when the Satan pops up his head and asks the questions, he's asking questions because now the Torah has left the spiritual realm and gone into the physical realm. How does that work? And the answer is, when it really works? It works when man is able to become humble, to take himself out of the picture, so to speak, not from to belittle in the sense like I'm a nothing because I'm going to have a negative sense of self. No, Moses knew who he was. What he was able to do, though, was he was able to get himself and his ego out of the way, so to speak, and therefore allow the space to be able to take it all in. What's interesting is if we look at the five books of Moses compared to the other prophetic works, so there are 24, there are five books of Moses, and then there are the writings of the prophets, and then there's the writings if you look at the holy books, the only other book that has the certain type of clarity in terms of the way it reads is the book of Joshua. Say, look, maybe as you continue on, it starts, like when you get to the prophets of, let's say, like Isaiah, Ezekiel, and like those, it's very hard. The clarity is not as much, it's not as clear. Because you see that there's something about the way Moses was able to, you know, be able to take in the message and then to transmit it to us. It's incredibly clear compared to, let's say, other holy books. So, but the idea that what this piece is telling us is that it's the key point is the ability to kind of set aside, to suspend the ego, and not to project as much. And by doing that, you're able to really take it in, and that's where we're able to experience Hashem and His Torah. So like you know, when we sit down to learn, to study Torah, so part of what we need to do, which is not our natural thing, is to be able to somehow like be more open, let's say, to be open-minded, to not be critical thinkers. That's not the idea, but as much as to really allow ourselves to be kind of, in a certain sense, there's a certain vulnerability that, let's say, we have to let ourselves get to a place of vulnerability and to be open-minded. And in that way, we're able to really take in the teachings of Torah. So I think that's probably, that's kind of like what the messaging that comes out from this piece. Questions or comments?
I'm still sort of curious as to know what the actual physical experience was, or what is written about. Like, that, I don't know if that's knowable, or if people have ideas about what actually the people heard or experienced or saw or whatever it was. Because you have this, you know, the Almighty is communicating routinely with Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is, he then takes the step, you know, one step further and then communicates in some way with the entire Jewish people. And what was that like? You know, what was that supposed to have been like?
So let's see. I'll give you a little bit and then we can do it next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't want to shift you from.
Check this out. Ready for this? Okay. Listen to this one.
Yeah, here we go.
With regard to the revelation, this is going, and now I'm actually turning the page back. So this is to 88. Okay. So we were in 89. Now I'm going to 88b. So Peches and Shabbos. With regard to the revelation at Sinai, Rav Yochanan said, "What is the meaning of that which is written? The Lord gives the words, the women that proclaim the tidings are a great host." It means that each and every utterance that emerged from the mouth of the Almighty divide into 70 languages. Similarly, the school of Rabbi Yishmael taught, "Behold, is my word not like fire, declares the Lord, and like a hammer that shatters a rock? Just as this hammer breaks a stone into several fragments, and so too each and every utterance that emerged from the mouth of the Holy One, blessed be He, divided into 70 languages. Okay? Meaning that as this is going on, they're hearing it. It could be that whatever was sent out, the communication, could be, it depended on the person, how they received it, or that, you know, let's see if I can find this quickly, otherwise we'll do it next time, but I'll give you just an idea. Like, it says that the entire world, when God said, "I am the one, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzeisicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim," that when God said, "I am the Lord who took you out from Egypt," that the entire creation was speaking. That the birds, that the rocks, the entire everything spoke. But it also says that the entire Ten Commandments were said at the same time. So that there are two versions of the Ten Commandments, but all of it was being said at the same time. It also says that they saw the sounds. What does that mean? How do you see sounds? Right? So it started, the problem of taking an event like this and putting it into the two-dimensional as opposed to the third, the three or the four or the whatever, how it's almost impossible. But we can try. The Talmud definitely, on 88A, it goes through that and other places. So we can look at that in terms of what they experienced. Like, for example, this piece where it says they stood at the lowermost part of the mountain. So the famous thing is that God overturned the mountain above the Jews, like he lifted the mountain above them. Doesn't mean that he literally lifted it above them. There was something about this experience that was so overpowering that there was actually they were forced into taking the Torah the way God gave it to them, because there was such clarity that they lost their ability to choose. They lost free will. So we can continue next time. We can go more into this piece, meaning like these additional pieces of the Gemara that describe what it was, Imam at Har Sinai, the revelation. It was something that, again, we can only try to put the pieces together to figure out like what exactly was experienced there, but it was clearly an otherworldly event that is something that we is the cornerstone of our belief system, that that God gave us the Torah at Sinai, and that, and, you know, today there are plenty of biblical criticism and things of that nature, questioning that whether God, you know, gave the Torah to Moses, like, but this is one of the fundamentals of our faith, that this is what happened. Okay.
Interesting. Very nice.
I guess.
Can you send me the link? Go ahead.
I guess Moses' humility must be somewhat of a thin line. I mean, if there is leading people, it's not like his humility is like, no, not me. Like, he's the guy. He's the one doing it. He's leading these people. It's got to be not like passivity.
It's not a passivity at all.
Probably.
Well, although, if you go back to Exodus 3, it's worthwhile to read Exodus 3, where Moses is at the burning bush, and that the back and forth between him and God, where he does not. He's like, I don't want this job, you know?
Right.
It's always the guy who doesn't want it. That's the guy for the job, you know? So, clearly there's something there. But you see, like, I would say that our greatest leaders are the ones who are the most humble, in the sense that it's not that they're not capable, talented. It's that they are so not looking for their... It's not about self-aggrandizement. It's not. I'm not looking at this. It's at them. They're selfless leaders. They give away. They give completely of themselves, and they were not looking. They're not looking for self enrichment.
They're not looking for recognition or glory upon them.
Correct. Like I would say, like this. The simplest thing is take any politician. The opposite is a Jewish leader. A true Jewish leader is a Moses or an Aaron, or you take like Rabbi Akiva or these people. They were never in it for themselves. That's not what it was about. It's a completely giving up of themselves and their love for the people, that they did it for that. Like a Menachem Begin, I think of, like, you know, in modern day, like if you read about him, you know, just like always was, it was never about himself. You know, he was there, he was doing it for, and I think that you have other examples. It could be like a Rabin also if you read about him. You know, there's something about these people. They were willing to really sacrifice for themselves, to give for the Jewish people. So that type of leadership. So then Moses, take that up 10 notches, was like able as a person in a spiritual realm. He was able to really, I mean, clearly was, you know, it's interesting. One of the descriptions of Moses, that when he was born, that there was light in the house. Like, you know, you read about, like, the way they describe Jesus' birth and all that stuff. That was, you know, remember, Moses came way before. Like, it's almost like they borrowed. from that, but that clearly when he was born, he was unique already. Like, he was, you're talking about a super talent and a person who was plugged in spiritually from day one. And that, you know, this was not your average person. So he was clearly already on that level of, you know, he was capable and born with the ability to be this, you know, remember, think about it, intellectually speaking, he was on a different plane. Think about the complexity of Torah. Moses gave that over. His ability, you know, intellectually was on the highest level. So take Einstein, take, you know, the smartest people that you can think of. Moses was, you know, on a higher level, which is, again, just, so you're talking about this leader of a tremendous, you know, intellectual abilities, and also his, you know, who he was on, you know, like from a psychological standpoint, in terms of his ability to suspend his ego. You know, like you're talking, this is not, we the problem for us is that when we come to these types of personalities and we're so small, relatively speaking, not to take anything away from any of you, I'll speak about myself, we're limited. We're small in terms of, you know, being able to relate to someone that's this big in terms of their intellectual and their mental, psychological makeup, who they were. These were amazing people. One of the most amazing things about Torah is that we never sugarcoat anything. Our Torah is critical of our heroes. We're not afraid to, like, you know, say it for what it was. So we see, even in Torah, the criticisms of Moshe, of other people like Avram, Yitzhak, when they messed up, Torah doesn't cover it up, it doesn't sugarcoat it, but we sometimes, unfortunately, don't understand how big these people were and how amazing they were, of what, you know, who they, what they did, how they were able to, you know, develop and become incredibly. Like, it says that Moses basically was an Ish Elokim. He was he was the most humble, and he's also like a godly person. He was godly, you know, like, but he became godly. He developed. He was able to make himself into this incredibly, incredible, you know, lofty person. So it's an amazing thing. And we call him Moshe Rabbeinu. He's our teacher. He was our shepherd. You know, all these, you know, descriptions of this person. And so you start seeing, like, it needs to be developed and worked on and tapped into to recognize and understand. And then once we appreciate it, then we come back to the books of Moses and say, wow, this is coming through, it's coming from God, coming through a very unique individual who's able to transmit it to us. And we needed him as a bridge. That's one of the things that I've been looking and reading, the Tiferes Yisrael, which is the book written by Maharal, on this subject of why did we need Moses as this person in the middle between us and God? Why do we have this person? There's a need for this bridge between this challenge of going from the non-physical into the physical realm. You needed the person. And then we see in this piece over here on 89 that he was, because of his humility, the fact that he was able to suspend his ego, that allowed him to be able to be the one who would be the transmitter.
Interesting.
Okay. So maybe, so I guess, so next time I will, we'll maybe bring some more of these, they're amazing Gemaras. The Gemara in Shabbos on Pei Ches and Pei Tes, 88 and 89, fantastic. In terms of what they kind of piece it together for us, and also we can look at, if you want, we can look at the Torah itself describes in multiple number of places it describes the event, and then the Talmud works with that and tries to piece it together for us, so we can look at that. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So, wishing everybody a great week.
Thank you.
Shavuot Tov.
Hey, thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Bye. Have a great week.